of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brother and sister, Salamun alaikum and welcome to a new episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Thank you for choosing this program to listen to. And inshallah, this program would be beneficial for you. Today, we're going to speak about modern idolatry.
Yourself, can't you see this wonder spread in front of you? The clouds floating by, the sky so clear and blue, planets in their orbits, the moon and the sun, such perfect harmony. Let's start questioning ourselves, isn't this proof enough for us?
Today is 6th of Jamadi Uthani, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri Calendar, corresponding to the 6th of Azar, 1404 of the Islamic Solar Hijri Calendar, and the 27th of November, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian Calendar. From Chapter Al Imran, verse 173, we'll listen and then we come back to the studio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم الذين قال لهم الناس إن الناس قد جمعوا لكم فاخشوهم فزادهم إيمانا وقالوا حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل.
Those to whom hypocrites said, "Indeed, the people have gathered against you, so fear them." But it merely increased them in faith, and they said, "Sufficient for us is Allah, and He is the best disposer of affairs."
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The enemy, propagating agents, and some simple-minded and coward people advisingly inspire that the group of enemies is strong and none can combat them, so it is better not to entangle yourself with fight. The true believers, without any fear and as they are qualified in the verse, calmly answered them. So the strongest barrier against all the threats of the enemy is faith and trusting in Allah. When a believer happens to be inflicted with disasters, he increases his reliance with Allah.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Today we're going to speak about modern idolatry. Sometimes Tawheed or monotheism isn't lost because people don't understand it, but because they're afraid of failure, fear of not increasing sales, fear of outselling competitors, fear of insecure business prospects. Ultimately, people choose instant guarantees over true trust. let's be honest, this practice is commonplace around us. From small businesses to establish oneness, they attach amulets to cash registers, place lucky numbers on display cases, or follow certain ritual to boost sales. All of this is disguised as just extra, just to boost motivation, or a business traditional passed down through generations.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Ali Host. Today we are going to talk about modern idolatry in 2025. If authentic Islamic teachings are not properly introduced, false ideas will take their place. People naturally seek spiritual connections. If told something is connected to divine knowledge, they accept it easily. Feng Shui has changed through time and cannot be trusted. Yet it thrives because it meets people's emotional needs. To continue bringing the votes and ideas and views of the other scholars in ground, we need to know that Feng Shui's emphasis on order and cleanliness closely mirrors Islamic teachings that have for centuries recommended purification of living environment, moderation and balance. Feng Shui's claim of improving happiness or sadness is simply a repetition of Islamic principles in another form. Islam emphasized simplicity and balance long before Feng Shui existed. Avoiding unnecessary possessions and maintaining a clean environment were underlined by the Imams 1,000 years ago. And then we have to know that ugly or animal-like statues may negatively affect the subconscious and disturb children's emotionally. The use of dog heads, frogs, or mice figures brings only anxiety and fear, not benefit.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every part.
Today's special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the end of time.
Showing off in worship or riyah is one of the hidden ways of committing shirk. Now we listen more. Some people do acts of worship to impress others instead of pleasing Allah. Examples include praying extra long when others are watching, giving charity to gain praise, or reciting Quran loudly to show off. Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, warned, "The thing I fear most for my ummah is minor shirk." Worship should be only for Allah, not for human praise. Now, we suggest some ways to protect ourselves from shirk. Think about them. One of them is trusting Allah completely. True tawakkul means using the means but believing that only Allah controls the results. Take your medicine, apply for your job, save your money, but your heart should depend only on Allah, not on the means. When we rely too much on people, objects, or plans, we slowly replace Allah's place in our hearts. The other way is reminding ourselves daily that Allah is sufficient for me and He's the best disposer of affairs. You can find this verse from the Holy Quran, chapter 3, verse 173.
So Allah Azza wa Jal, He wants to treat this arrogance that we human beings have through sujood. And this arrogance can only be treated by placing our forehead on the dust directly. Don't put a barrier between your forehead and the dust, the turba or the earth. Because the carpet will not give you that same result. Now that we understand the first reason, the Imam goes to the second reason. And the second reason the Imam tells Hisham ibn al-Hakam, remember in the hadith when he asked him, on what things can I do sujood? The Imam told him, on the earth and whatever is grown from the earth. And then Hisham asked him why. He said, because number one, if you pray on the earth directly, this will help you in becoming humble. Number two, the Imam told Hisham ibn al-Hakam, he said, because the people, they worship these items. The carpet is what? Man-made. And human beings, they worship man-made items. What the Imam basically is saying during salah, during sujood, you want to put all your focus and concentration on what? On Allah. That's why when you do sujood on something natural, created by Allah. Don't do sujood on something that is man-made, because it will remind you of the dunya. When you place your forehead on the carpet, this will remind you on the dunya. This will distract you from Allah Azza wa Jal. And the human being is distracted so easily. So if you don't want to be distracted, place your forehead on the dust that Allah created. It's not man-made. And then the Imam says, human beings, they worship their food and their clothes and whatever is man-made. Why? How do people worship them? The Imam means that they are so devoted to their desires more than they are devoted to Allah Azza wa Jal.
Dear brother and sister, we open a new chapter here, and that was about modern idolatry, one of the great and important phenomena in modern life. I think it's better to continue this interesting topic on the next episodes of today's special from IRIB English Radio. So be with us, and till then, we leave you in Allah's mercy. Fi amanillah.
لا إله إلا الله الله ربي محمد نبي علي إمامي لا فتى إلا علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي لا إله إلا الله الله ربي محمد نبي علي إمامي لا فتى إلا علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي
Can talk it down, turn the other way. Fear the truth, but it won't go away. Can you hear it calling? Yeah. You can write it down, but nobody cares. It's an untold story of our biggest fears. It can reach you with no warning. Can you feel?
I need forgiving. Cause I need forgiving. Cause I need forgiving. There's a part of me that won't understand, having sleepless nights with my head in my hands. I'm here and tears are falling, yeah. If I could right the wrongs, would you lend me your hand? I would make a difference to this beautiful land. If I'm nothing, I have my intention. When the sun goes down and there's nothing left around, can you feel it? Can you feel it? When your knees are on the ground, you may fear but it's allowed. Are you listening? Cause I need forgiving. I need forgiving. Cause I need forgiving. Oh, cause I need forgiving.
Thank you for joining us. The Hebrew media focused on the Iranian foreign minister's visit to Paris and on the path of the aggression against Gaza and Lebanon and on the concerns in the occupation entity over Hezbollah's possible response to the assassination of the senior commander, Haytham Tabtabai. In addition to Trump's attempts to accelerate normalization between Saudi Arabia and the Israeli entity. These were among the topics highlighted in the comments of analysts in Hebrew media, and we will discuss them today with Dr. Mohammad Qasem, writer and political analyst, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Dr.
Good
Mohammad.
Morning.
The visit of Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi to Paris was a main point of interest in the Hebrew media, which viewed Iran as still politically and militarily strong, and that Araghchi's talks in France will come from a position of Iranian strength, not the opposite. Well, Dr. Mohammad, is the Iranian visit or the Iranian Foreign Minister's visit to France a bad sign to Israel?
It can be looked in two ways. Some Israelis consider that it is very important, and they consider that Iran is still strong. And the other, they say that when Araghchi goes to France and to the three Europeans, means that they are in a weak position. So this is what is going on in the media of Israel. But in reality, the French, British and the German, they are anxious of the growing power of Iran. And they know that when they had heard of Araghchi that we are still fine and we are, and our budget is three times tripled from before and so on. And they know that the Iran has escalated their nuclear production, as well as their missiles and so on. And they are afraid also that these inventions or
yes.
these military projects can be transferred or that can be given to Russia. And that's why they are afraid that this support to Russia would help in the war that's going on with Ukraine,
okay.
as well as this will threaten Europe. Mm-hmm. This is why they consider that we have to calm down. Although the three had ordered more sanctions on Iran, and they consider that by these sanctions, Iran would submit. But on the contrary, the sanctions did give a kind of morale to Iran, and they are going there.
But isn't that contradictory? Because you've highlighted that they are the ones, part of the countries that imposed sanctions on Iran, and now this visit, as if giving a different impression.
Yeah, this is on one side. On the other side, they say that Iran is weak, the other analysis.
Okay.
But what we know is that they are afraid that Iran also would retaliate or would attack Israel, and that's why also they are afraid that...
Okay, and how would Israel view this, Dr. Mohammed? Israelis, it's a bad sign to them?
I said it. There are opposite opinions in Israel. Mm. Some consider that Iran is weak now.
Okay.
That's why it is going to Europe.
Okay,
and the others say
it
no,
strong.
It is not. It is strong, and they are going. And Araghchi goes to Europe or to France in order to ask for lessening down the sanctions and to have better relations for that. And they are afraid. The Israelis are afraid of any escalation that Iran would do, especially after the what had been mentioned by the leaders of Iran after the attack of the Lebanese leader, mm-hmm. when he was assassinated, and they said that we have to revenge.
Okay.
And this would make the Israelis very cautious and anxious.
Okay. However, Israeli concern over a possible Hezbollah response to the attack on the southern suburb of Beirut and the assassination of the martyr commander Abu Ali Tabtaba'i continued to dominate political and media discussion in the entity, and the Hebrew media reflected this state of anxiety. How do you expect the situation to develop on the Lebanese-Israeli front in light of the assassination of Tabtaba'i, martyr Tabtaba'i?
Of course, the Israelis are now considering the situation that they did not kill or did not assassinate a symbolic military person. No, they do know that they have assassinated the chief of staff, and this is a very and his loss or his death is a serious blow to the Lebanese. That's why they are anxious that the
how would the response look
the
like?
Response will be the same. They are but here what's going on? The resistance in Lebanon or Hezbollah do know. Hezbollah knows that there are still 5 points that Israel are occupying, that they had lost one of the leaders and so on, even though the Iranians had publicly said that they called for revenge, as I said before, mm-hmm. and so on. But Hezbollah now is calculating it very carefully, considering that they had lost, and at the same time they have to do something that would make not a reward, but at least that they compensate this loss in an attack. That's why they are calculating it very carefully and very seriously.
Yes, but would the Israelis read it in such a manner? Would it read it as a wisdom and patience from Hezbollah's side, or would it view it as weakness?
No, they are seeing
retreating from retaliation.
The same as they are looking to the visit of Araghchi to France. There are two opinions in the regime, the Israeli regime. They consider that it is a sign of weakness and they can do nothing and so on. Mm-hmm. And the other, they say, no, be careful. The Hezbollah is still strong, is still having rockets, he's still having drones. We have to take care. That's why they are afraid now of the 5 points in the south. They are afraid of the northern area in Palestine and so on. That's why they are making a kind of warning to these people to be careful if there will be a kind of retaliation from Hezbollah.
And they were doing maneuvers also at the border.
Of course, they are doing all these things.
Okay.
That's why
they are on alert.
They are alert now,
okay.
And at the same time, we have to say, we can say it briefly, all options are open.
Okay, Israeli social media focused on the state of alert and fear over Hezbollah's potential response to the assassination of the martyr Tabtaba'i. And here are some of the comments.
Ami Rojax, Hezbollah is astonishing in its ability to survive and in the decentralization of its leadership. And no matter how many of its leaders Israel assassinates, it always rises again and refuses to give up its weapons. Alon Fishman, there was a war in Lebanon that ended with our withdrawal from most areas in exchange for Lebanon committing to dismantle Hezbollah. But what we see now is that Hezbollah is arming itself. Daniel Amram, the alert level in the north was raised after the assassination of Hezbollah's chief of staff, out of fear of rocket fire into the depth, or infiltration into Israeli territory, or into positions controlled by the army in southern Lebanon.
How would you comment on these remarks highlighted by Israeli people and stating that there's the Israeli government asked the north settlers to actually stay on alert? And how do you think they view this assassination of Martyr Taptaba'i, in fear or in pride?
In both. They did find that the Hezbollah is still strong, is still able, can retaliate, can attack, and so on. And at the same time, some others consider that by assassinating this leader or the other leaders, this will weaken them. But if you go to the mass media or to the masses in the occupied Palestine or the Israeli regime, they consider that Hezbollah is still a very critical threat to them. And that's why they are planning to control or to make a siege or to raise the problems with the Americans.
Yes, but some of these remarks actually highlight that Netanyahu's his own credits are still high.
Of course.
Especially after such an assassination.
Of course. Oh, you know.
Will he gain more support with these kind of moves?
If we want to take it into the Israelis, they feel a kind of ecstasy when they know that they had lost this one. But when they think deeply, they say that this is a new threat. Mm-hmm. And some others would say that Netanyahu is leading them or pulling their legs to accept this situation for political interests of
to what
Netanyahu
extent
himself.
Will these actions and decisions made by Netanyahu, whether domestically or in the region, add to his own election campaign or to his own election ambition?
You summarized that.
Yes.
What Netanyahu?
That's his utmost goal, Dr. Muhammad.
To Netanyahu.
That's the utmost goal behind these assassinations. To preserve his own seat.
There is another thing. There is also the court. There is how he is accused of many crimes and corruption and so on. But now he is raising this issue because the elections are so close. And that's why he is doing his best to keep his picture.
Would it benefit him if Hezbollah retaliated?
I think that Hezbollah will study that well. I cannot say Hezbollah will do. But according to me,
do you think that Netanyahu wants to drag them into a war?
It. This is one of the
to benefit in the elections.
Of course. You see, there is a kind of pulling the legs of Hezbollah that. Netanyahu would have an excuse to say that, you see, I told you that this is a threat and that's it. This is well studied by the leaders of Hezbollah.
Okay.
And they are studying it carefully and objectively.
Okay, the growing relations between the United States and Saudi Arabia are a major interest for the Israeli entity as they facilitate the path towards Saudi-Israeli normalization, according to one commentator in Hebrew media. Do you really think that Zionists are convinced that strengthening U.S.-Saudi relations serves Israeli interests?
Yes. You see, your questions are really of double face.
Yes.
You cannot take one point of that. Some Israelis and most of the leaders consider that the more the relation between Saudi Arabia and the United States is going in a track that doesn't make any challenge or any threat to the Israeli regime.
Yes.
Because they consider that this is not military, this is not politically, it is mostly economic. And that's why Trump is pulling the money or taking the money of the Saudi Arabians and the Gulf for their interests. And at the same time, they are considering that the more relation between the United States and Saudi Arabia will make deterrence against Iran. And this will keep Iran aside the more they are involved in that. But at the same time, Israel is worried.
Why?
Worried because there is a kind of the missile systems that will be done in the will be produced in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, but whatever is produced is given to the United States of the America of America, and the United States of America is giving it to Israel.
Of course.
So Israelis are benefiting both ways.
Benefit, but at the same time, they know
most
that. But they know that the Saudi Arabia has limits in doing that. Saudi Arabia is a kind of guardian to the holy two holy places in the Islamic world, and at the same time they have the atomic. Now they are planning to have atomic plants and so on for a kind of not military, but at least they are afraid of that. And
okay, but there is another. Yes, please continue.
They are afraid that the United States would leverage or would lessen the sanctions on Iran by the pressure that bin Salman is trying to do. Bin Salman has also interests in having good relations with Iran.
Yes.
That's why they are afraid that this might also lead Iran to have more power, and this will threaten Israel.
Okay, what do you think of the claim that normalizing with Israel will actually strengthen Saudi national security? Because also there are different views to what the analysis you've just given.
Of course, look, the Saudis are keeping the door open. It's not closed or half open. Why? Because, as I said, that they are guardians of the Muslim holy places.
And that's what's stopping them from normalizing up to this moment. That's what's holding them back.
This is one. They are afraid that any normalization would empower the stand of Iran, who is saying that Israel is occupying Palestine and so on. And at the same time, the street in Saudi Arabia. Don't take only what is said in the media of the Saudi Arabia or even in the Gulf, but if you go down to the people are opposing such kind of relation with this entity, with this Israeli or Zionist state,
mm-hmm.
and that's why the Saudi Arabia were said it bluntly, and as we say, it was crystal clear. They said that. No normalization without a serious, irreversible
solution.
Step towards a Palestinian state.
Okay.
And this, of course, according to Israel, is an impossible issue.
Okay, but why do some Israelis believe that it's for the benefit of the Saudis to go into normalization? Because that will guarantee Saudi's Saudi national security. That's what the Israelis feel sometimes when they view about Saudi Arabia. They feel that the Saudis are in need of the protection of the Israelis in order to preserve their national security.
Saudi Arabia is not in need of Israeli protection. Saudi Arabia and the Gulf is in need
but
of
Emirates
the United
is benefiting
States.
A lot, United Arab Emirates.
Yes, economically.
Yes, maybe Saudi Arabia
politically,
wants to say.
But not in security.
Okay.
Because the Gulf is protected by the United States. The military bases are...
So it's a different matter.
Of course. Here, the United States is not Israel. Although they are very close allies and they are with great relations, but the interests are different.
Mm-hmm.
And Saudi Arabia is working now economically as well as politically and avoiding the embarrassment that will face if any step of normalization had taken place, especially that there are something waiting.
Okay.
Who is waiting? Iran and its allies, they consider.
Okay, that's moving to what can be called field normalization, Dr. Muhammad. Moving to what can be called field normalization, where work continues on creating railway lines connecting some Arab countries with the Israeli entity. Your opinion on the continuation of the work in the, on the railway line between some Arab countries and Israelis, despite the massacres that has been taking place in Lebanon, Gaza, Yemen, Syria?
I think that the UAE, it means the Emirates,
mm-hmm.
They have normalization between them and Israel. They are normal
officially.
Relations, officially. But
what about some other countries that are still continuing the work in the railway line?
This is economically. Now, the United States is also approving this and saying that go on, proceed, having the East, which is Emirate, Gulf, and the West, which is the Mediterranean. And they want this railway and for economical reasons in order to confront what is China doing.
Okay.
You have to take it in this prospect. We cannot say that the Chinese influence is not there. It is to block the more relations with China. And at the same time, we must know that what goes on between the Emirates and Israel is mostly economic,
okay.
mostly logistic, mostly technological, and so on. The question is, what if the oil stopped? What can they do?
Yes.
Then everything will be collapsed.
Okay, so it's based on these aspects. Dr. Muhammad Qasim, writer and political analyst, thank you very much for your analysis in today's episode.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, dear brothers and sisters, salam, and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. Have you ever thought about what true guidance looks like? In a world filled with influencers, opinions, and voices competing for our attention, the question remains, who really carries divine wisdom? Who should we follow? Who should we look up to, or who should we listen to? Over 14 centuries ago, Lady Fatima Zahra, salamullah alayha, the beloved daughter of the Holy Prophet, declared something extraordinary. She said, "We are his means in his creation, and we are his special ones and the locus of his holiness. We are his proof during the unseen, and we are the inheritors of his prophets." You may say, okay, 14 centuries ago, so what about now? You know, when you find the truth, it doesn't matter. The time doesn't matter. The distance in time, during the time, doesn't matter. The truth is the truth. The humans, they remain alive by their legacies. And if those humans are huge in their character, they are so great, they will live forever. And Ahlul Bayt of the Holy Prophets, they are such people. These words are not just about history, they are about us right now. So in this narration, Lady Fatima is describing the role of the Ahlul Bayt. They are the means of God in creation, meaning they are the channels through which guidance flows. And the proof of God during times when He is unseen, reminding humanity that divine wisdom is always present. And they are the inheritors of the prophets, carrying forward the light of revelation. The Quran confirms this unique role. And Allah says, indeed, Allah only desires to keep away impurity from you, O people of the house, the Ahlul Bayt, and to purify you completely. Why? Because Allah purified them because He wanted them to be guides for us, purified, pure guides for us. And without that, we couldn't follow them, we couldn't trust them. Now think about this form of a scientific lens. In psychology, researchers talk about trusted role models, people who embody integrity and stability, and therefore become anchors in times of confusion. Studies show that communities with reliable moral leaders experience greater resilience, trust, and even lower stress levels. Isn't that what the Ahlul Bayt are meant to be? They are not just historical figures, but living anchors of the soul. So Lady Fatima's words are a timeless reminder. If we want to connect to God, we must connect to His chosen means, the Ahlul Bayt. Peace be upon them. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin.
Reach out for you to hold my hand. The rain may fall, but united we stand. Our prophet guided the children, they grew into be men. He taught the brothers be equal and respect your friend.
باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
ودعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon the soul of Prophet Muhammad and his purified progeny. Dear audience, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program, Let's Recite the Quran, coming to you from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm your host Mahdi, and as always, we are joined by Quran expert, dear brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Assalamu alaikum, brother Mahdi. Thank you for having me, and assalamu alaikum to all the dear listeners of this program. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you, brother. Well, dear audience, as you may know, the program Let's Recite the Quran consists of several Quranic parts. First, Brother Muhammad is going to talk about the music or the musical miracle of the Noble Quran. Then, we all are going to listen to a recitation by a famous reciter of the Noble Quran. And at the end, Brother Muhammad is going to analyze that recitation from different aspects. Stay tuned.
إن هذا القرآن الذي جل فيه
Dear audience, as always, in the first part, Brother Muhammad is going to talk about the miraculous music of the Noble Quran. Up to now, we have talked about a lot of different aspects of this issue, and now we're going to talk about a new one. Brother Muhammad, at your service.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Okay, for today's program, I want to talk about certain expressions that are used in the Quran that, and certain words which are rather strange and rarely used in the Arabic language, and they have a very specific meaning.
Interesting.
Okay, in Surah As-Saffat, when Allah wants to describe the fruit that exists in hell, the fruit that the inhabitants, the inmates of hellfire will eat, which is not a very delicious fruit.
It's a fruit that actually
does more harm to them and does not do any good to them. And, you know, it causes their intestines to burn and to rip apart and so on and so forth. So it's not a very good fruit to eat. In fact, the water that they drink is also boiled water, which again basically messes up their bodies and their internal organs. Anyway, mm-hmm. So Allah says in Surah As-Saffat, verse 65, about the tree of Zaqum. The name of the tree is Zaqum. Mm-hmm. And the fruit of it, Allah describes it by saying, طَلْعُهَا كَأَنَّهُ رُؤُوسُ الشَّيَاطِينَ. Now, this is a very unlikely and very remote way of describing
frightening
fruit. Yeah, and also a frightening one. It's Allah is comparing these fruits that exist on the tree of Zaqum to the heads of devils. So this is something that's really scary and frightening. And imagine a fruit in front of you that looks like the head of a devil with horns and, you know, a very ugly face. And so Allah uses these kinds of comparisons in the Quran to describe certain concepts that one would not imagine such a comparison. And here we could see that this strange fruit that no one knows of, Allah compares it to the heads of devils. Another example is in Surah An-Najm.
To show how awful the hell is.
Yeah, exactly. In Surah An-Najm, when the Arabs say that, they say that we have sons, the sons are ours, and daughters are for God. They say the angels, are the daughters of God. Mm-hmm. And Allah says, "Tilka idhan qismatun dhiza." The word dhiza itself, it means that this is a very unfair division. That they're saying that Allah's part is the angels, which are His daughters, and the sons are ours. The word dhiza is a very strange word itself. So using this word it's very uncommon to use this word in Arabic.
And the meaning itself?
And it means unfair.
Unfair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Allah says, tilka idhan qisma. Qisma means division or something that's distributed, okay? Dhiza,
mm-hmm.
It's very unfair. Not in the sense that, sons are better than daughters, but according to them, they believe that sons are better and daughters are, they're not as good as sons. So Allah is saying from their viewpoint, it's an unfair division. And Allah is using this word, Uliza. And of course, such a thing is not true. Allah does not have daughters. The angels are not male or female. They are, they don't have a gender.
And maybe so wants to say that this kind of belief is rare. Using such a kind
exactly.
of word.
And it's, that's another point. True.
Okay, thank you, dear Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. You're still listening to the program, Let's Recite the Quran. Stay tuned. Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, now in the second part of the program, let's recite the Quran. We are going to listen to the recitation of Surah Az-Zalzala, recited by Sheikh Anwar Shahat. Let's enjoy it.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. إِذَا زُلْزِلَتِ الْأَرْضُ زِلْزَالَهَا وَأَخْرَجَتِ الْأَرْضُ أَثْقَالَهَا وَقَالَ الْإِنسَانُ مَا لَهَا يَوْمَئِذٍ تُحَدِّثُ Welcome.
Dear audience, you're still listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran, coming to you from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. What you just listened to was recitation of Surah Al-Zalzala, recited by Sheikh Anwar Shahat. And now, Brother Muhammad, let's talk about this beautiful recitation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Okay, this surah begins with a verse that has a lot of the letter Zay in it. إِذَا زُلْزِلَتِ الْأَرْضُ زِلْزَالَهَا زُلْزِلَتِ الْأَرْضُ زِلْزَالَهَا This sound of Zay, right after each other, it gives the impression of an earthquake. The sound of an earthquake, like a buzzing sound,
mm-hmm.
like when an earthquake comes. You know, there's this distinct sound. I remember once, like 10 years ago, 12 years ago, there was an earthquake in Qom, and the sound of it was something that resembled a zzz sound. I remember we were at our house, and then the whole house started shaking.
Actually, it resembles vibration.
Vibration, exactly. Whenever your cell phones vibrate, it makes a buzzing sound.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and that's the case with an earthquake. So just by this verse, Allah is depicting an earthquake, the sound of an earthquake. And Sheikh Anwar Shahad used the two maqams, Sika and Bayati. Okay.
Now let's talk about the tajweed points, brother.
Yes. الأرض الأرض Okay, we have mm-hmm. a Ra which is Sakin preceded by a Fatha. Okay, so and the letter of the Fatha is a Hamza. Hamza has to be pronounced with Tarq.